You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to get a crash course in diet culture, a lesson in fat phobia 101 mixed with a little intuitive eating 101, and a pep talk for burning the damn wagon. So, like, get ready. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am pumped that one of my favorite plant party products on the planet is sponsoring this episode. If you've spent but a few seconds skimming my Instagram or binge watching my YouTube channel, which you should, by the way, if you haven't, but when you do, you'll see that Sun Warrior Plant Protein Powder is the Kanye to my West, the Bees to my knees, the Wilson to my Castaway, something I would not want to live without. When I'm looking for a way to make my smoothies actually fill me up so I don't need a follow-up snack a few minutes after finishing my smoothie, I blend in Sun Warrior because I don't want to get bloated, gassy, or feel crappy after consuming protein powder. I use Sun Warrior. Because I am not a fan of protein powders with weird, chalky textures and nasty flavors, I use Sun Warrior. See, it's no wonder I blend Sun Warrior protein powder into every smoothie I make and bake it into almost every baked good I bake. If you want some recipes for doing the same, head to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/partyinmyplants. Click subscribe and you'll get an epic, easy Sun Warrior plant protein recipe in your inbox every month. And if you want to get your mitts on Sun Warrior for 15% less than the rest of the world pays to get their mitts on it, just use the code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on their site, sunwarrior.com. Again, in case you sneezed as I said that, I said you can use code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on sunwarrior.com to save 15%, my friend. The end of the sponsorship thing. I mean, let's get into the meat of the episode, or not meat, the tofu of the episode. My guest today is a badass and a half. Not sure what that means, but I guess I said it because what she does for a living is badass, and she herself is a badass, totaling to 1.5 parts of badass. Or I guess that's really 2 parts badass. I'm really not great at math. But anyway, by day, Isabel Fox and Duke helps women stop feeling crazy around food, specifically women who are trapped in diet land. And by night, Isabel practices what she preaches, which is intuitive eating, health at every size, and filtering her social media to maintain a positive body image. She also eats a lot of Burmese food, which, in case you don't know, means grub from various regions of Myanmar. I could have talked with Isabel for hours and hours, which is why this episode is especially long, because as you'll hear, I needed my own crash course in diet culture with a side of fat phobia 101. Okay, well, now's the part where you put on your suspenders, grab a healthy snack, and nudge those nerdy glasses up your nose because school is in session. Isabel, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I am so excited to pick your very knowledgeable brain.
Yay, me too. I'm super pumped to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. I feel like I know you so well because you've been on my friend Katie Dalebout's podcast, what, like 3 times now?
Yeah, I think at least 3 times. I've known Katie for many, many years. She's an alumna of my program, of my coaching program, and we're just like good buddies. And she's awesome. And we've had some very various intensive chats.
So, yes. Yeah. So I feel like I know you. But I mean, for people who don't know you and you don't know your story of how you've become like the God-sent human for women who feel crazy about food, can you give us the lowdown?
Yeah. Well, so I help women stop feeling crazy around food. And specifically how I mean that and what I mean by that is I help women who are really kind of trapped in diet land. And as a result, right, most people who are like really like aggressively restricting or, you know, constantly trying to lose weight or struggling with poor body image, a lot of times other behaviors will come up as well, right? It kind of becomes like the snowball effect of like, you know, oh my gosh, I shouldn't eat that, but oh my God, I really want to eat that. But okay, but if I eat that, I'm going to need another one. And okay, screw it, I'm just going to have the whole pan. Right. And mm-hmm. this is, it becomes this whole, it's really kind of like this anxiety around food, I think, that, you know, results in all sorts of sort of dysfunctional behaviors, including things like binge eating and emotional eating is certainly, one that comes up with my clients all the time. And, you know, sort of just this idea of like, okay, I'm going to try to be good today. And then, you know, oh, actually, no, I blew it. I hate myself. You know, I hate my body, right? Like there's just all these thoughts that are sort of a product of living in a world where thinness is really valued and thinness is, you know, we're constantly being told we should be like thinner and we need to control our size and control our body. And this can really screw with people's food. I mean, unsurprisingly, yeah. right? I mean, you don't necessarily need to sort of really struggle deeply with this stuff yourself to kind of see how this could get out of control for a lot of people really quickly. I certainly was one of those people. I have like a really extreme story. I was like, you know, clinically diagnosed with binge eating disorder at one point. And so what that meant was like my entire life basically revolved around how am I going to lose weight? How am I going to lose weight? How am I going to try and get thinner? How am I, what should I eat? What should I not eat? You know, my whole life revolved around trying to become thinner from a very, very young age. I mean, I was put on my first diet by my pediatrician when I was 3, which yeah, also just kind of goes
crazy.
Yeah. Kind of just goes to show how like screwed up our culture is about this stuff.
Why did he do that? What was the reasoning?
I was in the 95th percentile of weight for my height. And so it's just like, oh, you're like on the high end. So like right. better watch it, you know, which is ridiculous because like somebody's got to be on the high end. You know what I mean? When you think about it, it's like there's always going to be people on the margins, right? And it's, right. but it's, there's this obsession with don't be on the margins, don't be on the margins. You know, you got to conform to this specific ideal. I mean, that the whole concept of BMI sort of is a denial of the existence of body diversity itself, right? It's like everyone should look the same when that's not really true or realistic. And yeah, for whatever reason, I mean, I was a perfectly healthy baby. I just wow. was 95th percentile in weight for my height. And so my doctor was like, oh, better watch out, you know, better watch her, right? And so my, you know, my mother, of course, also being just a human being in our culture is like, oh my gosh, yes, what do I do? You know, and then they put wow. me on a, I was put on a low carb diet when I was a baby, literally a baby. My mom jokes, she calls it the broccoli and skim milk diet. Like that's like all I was allowed to eat. I mean, she's being hyperbolic, but like she basically tells this joke about how she like, you know, the doctor was like, better watch your weight. And they just cut out a bunch of stuff from my, like that was, that I was, you know, I was no longer allowed to eat as a kid. And as a result, what ended up happening was that I became like kind of obsessed with food, right? Like yeah. I was always, you know, it was like, oh my God, I'm not supposed to eat that chocolate bar. Oh my God, I want the chocolate bar. Right.
Right.
And I was just, I remember I got to have one candy bar a week and it would be like, oh my, it would be like the thing that I would look forward yeah. to in my day. I get to have one candy bar. Right. And oh again, as time went on, right? I mean, I think the sort of the obsession with food and this feeling of like, I can't, I just want all the things and my hunger is not trustworthy, right? Because if were up to me, I would just eat everything in sight, right? Like that's just how I felt. You know, starting at 3, that's a pretty young age. But like, you know, I hear my clients, some of them will start like, I was 11 when I went to my first Weight Watchers meeting with my mother. Or like, I was this age, I was that age. And some people, it's like, I was in college and I, you know, gained 10 pounds because I was drinking beer. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to go on a diet to lose it. And they could never get off the diet binge yeah. cycle from there. This is sort of the way the diet binge cycle works. You know, it's like, you get the message, your body's not okay. That's step one, right? You somehow get the message, your body's not good enough the way it is. You go on a diet, right? Maybe you lose like a little bit of weight or you stick to your diet for like a, you know, short period of time, right? And then most people, 95% of people are going to rebound, right? They're going to regain the weight. They're going to, you know, whether it be just because they're just like, screw it, I can't do this anymore and regain the weight, which is actually the ideal scenario. Or like a lot of people will end up kind of falling into binge eating patterns, right? And so that, you know, that can get more and more extreme as time goes on. But so what ends up happening is you go on the diet, you rebound in some capacity, whether, you know, binging or just, you know, quote unquote, falling off the wagon, whatever that looks like for you, you gain weight back or you just feel like, oh my gosh, this is a nightmare. This is so awful that I'm, you know, I'm so bad today. I've eaten so bad. Whatever happens, you feel like shit about yourself. And then you're like, oh, well, okay, so tomorrow's day one and I'm really going to stick to it this time. I'm going to start over. And a lot of times it's not even start over. A lot of times it's, okay, I need to restrict more. Mm. Right. And then it's just and so what you're doing is you're setting yourself up for an even more extreme rebound on the other end. Right. So like for me, it started with like this low carb stuff when I was a kid or whatever, but it was like, at some point I myself, and this was completely on my own, my doctor did not recommend this. My parents did not recommend this. At some point I just felt that I was like, I need to lose weight. What am I going to do? And I was like, oh, I'm going to only eat this amount of calories. Right. And it just mm-hmm. became more and more and more intense on the extreme side. And then of course, for me in particular, at some point, the binge eating, right, the rebounds become more extreme. And I think that that's where you really start to see binge eating, right? Like that's sort of where the sort of concept of binge eating disorder comes from. It's really, you know, in my mind, binge eating disorder is just really eating disorder plus binging, right? Plus the rebound.
Well, let's define binge eating, if you don't mind, because I feel like I often say binge eating casually, like with my friends and family, like, I mean, I totally do a disservice and I'm probably like a bad person for doing it, but like I'll eat something fast. I'll like literally like eat an, like,
you're not
know.
A bad person for eating fast.
No. I feel bad making light of a serious thing because I'll eat like a, I don't know, we're like eating hummus and I'll have like four chips in like a minute and I'm like, whoa, guys, I just binge ate. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I just binge ate. And they're like, shut up. And for me, it feels really aggressive and intense because I just shoved like four chips in my mouth in like a minute or, you know, a few seconds. And for me, that's like, whoa, I just binge ate. Like, slow down. What are you doing? You're not even thinking. You're not eating with thought and mindfulness. But I'm sure that's not like what binge eating actually is, right?
Well, so binge eating is okay. So people have all sorts of different definitions of binge eating, most of which I think are completely unuseful. And like, it's like, oh, if you eat past this certain amount, or if you, I mean, like the DSM has the most ridiculous definition of binge eating, which is basically like eating large quantities of food that are more than quote unquote normal eaters eat within like a short period of time. Like, it's just, it's like, that's not helpful. Like, what are you talking about? How much
is a normal eater?
Like, what the fuck are you saying? You know? And so, but typically, right? So the definition that I've found most useful and that I certainly use in my practice, right? Like, binge eating is a reaction to deprivation. Right. So it is, I shouldn't eat the chocolate. Okay. I'm going to eat. Nah, screw it. I'm going to eat 10. Mm, right. Okay. Or like, I shouldn't. But here's the thing about binge eating. So that's one sort of version of binge eating that comes up a lot with my clients or just women who sort of have these sort of diet mentality thoughts. I shouldn't eat chocolate. Screw it. I'm going to eat 10. But what they, cause they're just like, they're sitting on their hands trying not to eat the chocolate, and the chocolate's becoming more and more sort of seductive the more you sit on your hands trying not to eat it, right? It's like sitting on your hands trying not to eat chocolate literally makes you want it 10 times more. Binge eating, to some extent, at some point, is a natural response to hunger, to restriction, to deprivation, to all of these things that dieting can create for women. Binge eating is a natural, healthy response to those things. So to be clear, binge eating is not a problem in isolation. Binge eating is a symptom. It's a response to what, in my opinion, is the real problem, which is like sort of extreme restriction around food.
I love that. That's really clarifying and helpful.
Yes. So again, different than mindless eating, different than emotional eating.
Yeah. What's emotional eating?
Yeah. Great question. So binge eating is a reaction to deprivation, right? It's a rebellion against dieting or diet mentality in some capacity. It's the feeling of, I shouldn't eat that. Screw it. I'm going to eat 10, right? Like, it's that, right? It's the falling off the wagon type of eating, right? That's how I define binge eating. And that's how I found the most helpful definition of binge eating for the purpose of actually, you know, changing your relationship with food. Emotional eating is just straight up like, I'm bored, I want a cupcake. It's just like, oh, like, I'm bored, I want a cupcake, or I'm stressed, I want like something pleasurable in my mouth to distract me from my feelings, or, you know, any reason why you might choose food, which is biologically pleasurable, to kind of soothe yourself, right? To soothe yourself of like whatever discomfort, emotional discomfort that you may be experiencing. Now, here's the thing. One of the reasons why these two words, emotional eating and binge eating, get sort of confused all the time is because they often converge. So what will happen is like, somebody will be on a diet and then they'll like, something will happen, right? They'll like get anxious. They'll be stressed out at work. And then they'll say, oh, screw it. I'm just going to have the cupcake. So it becomes like a combination. It's like, it starts with, I want the soothing, but because after they've eaten the cupcake, they feel like they've fallen off the wagon. Now they're also in binge eating territory. intuitive eating is a great place to start for people who are doing this diet binge cycling thing. Mm-hmm. When you're like perpetually restricting yourself, binge eating for many people is going to be, for the majority of people, like some sort of binging or some sort of rebounding or some sort of falling off the wagon is the majority experience for restrictors. Most restrictors will end up rebounding, like literally like 95%, right? Like the vast majority will end up rebounding. The people who don't are the people who we would put into the category of like restrictive eating disorder, typically, where it's like they're hanging on for dear life, but like their life revolves around food, right? Like in order to hanging on is a full-time job.
Right.
Right. Gotcha. And so people always say, what's the answer here? And I'm like, well, for starters, stop dieting. And people say, what the hell does that even mean? I've been dieting since I was 3. Like when somebody said to me, just stop dieting, I would like laugh. I would be like, what are you talking about?
It's all you know.
Right. Like if I stopped dieting, I would just literally eat forever like Violet Beauregard from Willy Wonka and like just like become like a blueberry, right? Like what do you mean stop dieting? For people who have been dieting for a long time, the concept of not dieting is almost like absurd.
Interesting. So I feel like, you know, for a time, a long period of time, dieting was like a real thing people were on, you know, Weight Watchers diet or Atkins diet or South Beach diet. But now are you kind of saying that people could be on quote unquote diets or having the diet mentality without like announcing to the world, I am on Weight Watchers?
For sure. I think a lot of people are dieting, but they're calling it like just making healthy choices. But like, come on, let's be real. Yeah. Like they're creating rules around what they should and should not be eating for the purpose of trying to manipulate their bodies. Like it's the same shit.
Ugh. Well, what is diet culture? I had never heard about this till I heard from you.
Diet culture basically just means we live in a culture in which dieting is normal. So for example, one of the reasons it took me so long to figure out that binge eating wasn't actually the beginning of the problem, that like binge eating was a reaction to the dieting, that the dieting was actually part of the problem, right? The reason it took me so long to figure out that I wasn't just binging, I was pendulum swinging back and forth, but I didn't realize that that was what was going on because I just assumed dieting's totally normal and fine.
Right.
Because like, isn't it fine and normal? Isn't that what just everyone does? Isn't it what you're just supposed to do? You're just supposed to like, if you think you're too fat, you're just supposed to not eat the stuff. Right. It's just like, that's normal in our culture. Like our culture just deems that normal, right? There are billions and billions of dollars of marketing dollars every day just spent on just trying to convince people that that's normal. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're just trying to convince people that that's healthy. And that like, if you can't do it, there's something wrong with you.
Right. Willpower.
Right. Willpower, right? When in reality, this is not a willpower issue. Eating is a biological instinct. Saying eating is a willpower issue is like saying like fucking, excuse my language, is a willpower. You know, like, it's just not. We're animals. We're human animals who need to eat to live and need to eat a certain amount to live and need to get certain macronutrients to live functionally and sustainably, right? So at some point, your instincts, your biological instincts will overwhelm your willpower. Your willpower is rendered useless at a certain point, right?
Totally. Right now, we're in a challenging place, which is clean eating, healthy eating, which is what I help people do, is seen as a diet. I mean, it kills me. And I don't know like how to process my feelings around it because like I'm helping people eat healthier and I'm extraordinarily passionate about it and that's what I want to do. But I'm not trying to do it as a diet. And there's a lot of people on social media or in weight loss books in the stores and whatever that are eating my way, but with your, you know, description of a diet mentality. And that is, that's not it. It's a very different distinction.
And I would make the argument they're not even eating your way because in your way, there is room for a handful of fries.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Right? Like it's not the rules and regulations. You're in the box or you're out of the box. Like you're on the wagon or you're off the wagon. What I would call that is like, you know, so like I tell my clients, I practice health at every size. Which basically just means like, I'm going to pursue health. I'm going to treat my body well. I'm not going to intentionally, purposely try to squeeze my body, you know, the round peg of my body into a square hole or whatever the thing is, right? Like, I'm just going to treat myself well. I'm going to feed myself well. I'm going to just pursue health. Wherever my body ends up is by definition going to be the healthy size for me.
Right.
Right. Wherever I end up body-wise, when I am making healthful choices, is my healthy body. A lot of people, dieters, right? And as far as the way that I'm describing them, they go the other way. They're like, I'm going to pursue making myself have the right body, and I'm going to call that healthy.
Right.
And a lot of people are pursuing the right body in really unhealthy ways, not just mentally, but also physically. I mean, part of my story is that the only way that I could lose weight in the long term, at some point I got so desperate to keep the weight off because I kept like doing diet binging. I got so desperate to like actually lose weight that I turned to drugs. Like I literally was like, snorting cocaine. I was like, oh yeah, I was like full on like addicted to coke because I was just so desperate to lose weight.
Man, you on coke would be an absolute insanity.
That's true. But it's like, this is the thing is, it's like people are pursuing weight loss with this vigor. Like I need to do it. I need to do it. And what's upsetting is that they're calling it healthy, but let's be real. That's not their primary motivation. People do all sorts of really unhealthy stuff in the name of pursuing thinness.
Totally.
Because in many instances, it's not health that they actually care about. That's just the pretty name that they put on on their pursuit of thinness. What they're actually going after is love, social acceptance, social status, whatever they think thinness is going to give them in society.
Well, how did you know when you reached, you know, a weight that was appropriate for your unique body? Like, how did you know when you reached, like, how does weight loss fit into this?
I'll tell you exactly. I got to a point where I was like, I cannot keep doing this. This is unhealthy. This constant pursuit of weight loss is unhealthy. I'm actually going to focus on health directly, listening to my body, taking care of my body, you know, mental health, sanity around food, getting rid of this diet mentality that drives me crazy, right? Like all of this, I'm just going to focus on just taking care of myself holistically, mentally, physically, all like really actually pursue like recovery from all these like toxic messages.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to take care of myself the way I would take care of like a little baby girl.
Yes.
Like the way that I would take care of my little daughter or the way I would take care of my little dog, right? I would not treat my daughter like, okay, how are we going to get 10 pounds off of you this month? I'd be like, hey, baby girl, what do you need? How are you feeling? You don't feel well? Okay, what do you need? Okay, well, we want to make sure that you're getting enough food. We're going to treat you well, right? That's how I was like, I'm going to treat myself the way I would treat my little baby daughter. I'm not going to treat myself like some ornament that is just like not good for nothing but the way she looks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm going to actually treat myself like a human being.
Nice.
Right? Feed myself.
What a concept.
Yeah. I'm going to actually, rather than like a piece of meat, I'm going to actually treat myself like a human being. Feed myself good foods, make sure I get enough food, make sure I'm eating food units that make me feel good, listen to my body, drink water, get sleep, like just basic self-care, treat myself the way I would treat my little baby daughter, right? And then as I did that, and I said, and wherever my weight falls is wherever my weight falls. You know what I mean? Like when I'm doing that, wherever my weight falls, I don't care. My weight is not my business anymore. Like my obsession with that took me on a real roller coaster ride that ruined years of my life.
Yeah.
Right? Wherever my weight falls, I'm just going to focus on actual health. Wherever my weight falls is where my body's supposed to be. Wherever my weight falls.
It's like
falls,
a trust fall.
Yeah, exactly. Health at every side, right? I'm going to pursue health, how I define it, mental, physical, holistic, right? And wherever my weight ends up, when I'm doing that is where my weight ends up, right? Wherever my body is along the way is where my body's supposed to be that day. And what ended up happening was this was a couple of years of a process, right? It was like, you know, really pursuing weight neutral health, right? Like the pursuit of health, right? The pursuit of health outside of this, like you just trying to make your body look the way the society tells you it should look, right? And what ended up happening was like at some point after a couple of years, like, you know, my weight fluctuated because my weight was all over the place for so many years. And so like there was like a, you know, period of adjustment. My body's like trying to figure out, my weight's like fluctuating. And then like after a couple of years, my weight just stopped changing.
Mm.
I just became a weight, you know,
and it's just like, hung out. I'm just a weight now.
Yeah. Like gotcha. This is just like clearly like the size that I'm supposed to be. Like I don't do anything to make myself be the size that I am. I just treat myself well without worrying about my weight. And over time, what ended up happening is I just was treating myself well, just treating myself like I would treat my little baby daughter, right? Like, you know, there were weight fluctuations at first because I was like, you know,
yeah,
like my weight was all over the place back in the day. And then it just sort of, I just at some point just kind of settled into a body. And so there's actually, right. And it was just like, and this is how normal eaters, right? Normal eaters in quotes, they're not waking up every day being like, how do I stay this size?
Right.
They just are eating. They're just doing their thing. They're just doing their animal instinct thing. And they just are their size, right? They're genetically designed to be wherever they are, right? Some people are bigger, some people are smaller, some people are shorter, some people are taller, right? Like there is, it's called weight set point, which you may have heard me talk about on some interviews, but basically there is this idea that, right, when you think about a normal eater, you know, they're not trying to be their size. They just are doing their animal instinct thing, taking care of themselves, listening to their bodies, which they probably barely even think about. You know, sometimes they eat when they're hungry, sometimes not. Sometimes they have fries occasionally, sometimes not, right? But they're just generally just kind of doing their animal instinct thing, and they just are a size, right? Like your weight is actually designed to regulate itself in the absence of extremes, in the absence of like major league interference.
That makes so much sense. Is that when you say normal eater, just doing their animal thing, is that eating intuitively, to go back to that? Like what, I mean, there's a lot of, that's a buzzword right now. Intuitive eating. I eat intuitively. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Like what is that?
So intuitive, this is a really good question. So I actually make a distinction between quote intuitive eating and quote normal eating.
Okay.
So intuitive eating, they're very, I mean, they're similar and I talk about them both and they're both like important concepts to understand, but I'll share the distinction. So intuitive eating, it's the intentional practice of listening to your body's biological signals. So signals meaning on a basic level, things like hunger, things like fullness. You know, dieters wake up and they're like, it's 8 a.m. Dr. Oz told me to go have a cup of acai berries. But like an intuitive eater will be like, I'm kind of hungry. Like maybe like 8:15. Oh, I'm a little hungry. I'm going to have some whatever I want that makes me feel good right now that I'm in the mood for. Right? Like it's like you're listening to your actual biological instincts around food rather than trying to follow the dictates of some external diet that's been imposed upon you. Most people do not stick to external diets that have been imposed upon them very long. One of the things I like about your approach specifically to health, right? Because I was like, you know, looking at your website before we chatted, and it seems like there's much more of an emphasis on like, how do you insert vegetables rather than like, how do you take out the bad, the quote unquote
we don't talk
bad
about
thing.
That.
Right? Exactly. And that's the thing is like, you know, there's a ton of evidence to suggest that people actually have much better health outcomes when they focus on like, what things can I do? What things can I be excited about doing to like insert healthy behaviors? Like, can I insert broccoli into my macaroni and cheese, right? Like yeah. It still counts as broccoli if it's in your macaroni and cheese, like, interestingly enough. Right?
That's so funny.
100 years ago, you know, health was about inserting stuff more frequently. It was about making sure that you got enough whatever, you know, protein, enough chicken soup, enough whatever the thing was. Like, oh, eat this health-inducing thing.
Yes.
Right? And now it's like diet culture, for the most part, is all about how do you quit sugar? How do you quit this? How do you take out that? Don't eat this. Don't eat
grains,
that. Right?
And it's
like,
don't eat this.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, that is, it's a
It's restriction.
It's a disaster.
It's a diet. Yeah.
Right. And it does not work for most people.
And it shouldn't. I mean, it's a terrible way to live. Unfortunately, my fiance's mother passed away this past summer from cancer. And, you know, as she was on her deathbed, like she was not thinking about dieting. She was not caring about extra pounds. She wasn't like, you know, but all those moments that she had spent in her short life worrying about the shit she couldn't eat. It's just wasted moments, you know, where she was like, oh, I can't eat this cake. I can only have like, she would like ration out like 8 almonds as a snack. And it's like, you know, when at the end of the day we die and all that shit doesn't matter. And it's a waste of time. And it makes me so frustrated that people waste their time and energy and happiness on stupid shit like that.
Right. I mean, preach it, girl. You're preaching the choir. I mean, yeah, totally.
Okay. What's normal eating?
It's like, you know, intuitive eating is literally, it's a tool.
Like when you're transitioning from living someone else's rules to listening to your own body's rules, you still have to tell yourself, okay, I know I'm used to eating at 8 a.m., but let's focus on my body right now. It's kind of like a middle ground.
Even it's just more like, okay, I don't want to diet anymore. So how am I going to make decisions around what I'm going to eat? Right? Like we all are making decisions about what and when we eat and how much we eat and all the things, right? Like that's, we're all making those decisions all day long. If I'm not dieting, if I'm not making those decisions based on what Dr. Oz told me to eat, how am I going to make them? And so what intuitive eating is sort of the intentional practice of like, I'm going to see how it feels to make decisions about what to eat based on things like how my body's feeling. How hungry am I? How full am I? Right? Like basics, right? Like, yeah. Like mind blown. Like this is so, babies do this naturally. That's the thing that just
my dog does it naturally.
Time. Your dog does it naturally.
I love right? when he passes up food. I'm like, dude, you're amazing. Like, wow. Like, you know, right. He's just like, he goes over, he sniffs his bowl and he's like, nah, not feeling right. it right now. Not in the mood. I'm like, go you, right. Tommy. Go you.
Exactly. And so it's like, this is not brain science. It's basically just you've been ignoring a critical natural biological process. And many of you are experiencing dysfunction as a result, right? Many of you are just like freaking out and binging. And you know what I mean? Like so many people, you know, for most people, they're not capable of, like when you screw with your biological instincts, things are going to go haywire, typically. Right. So intuitive eating is just like, it's a, in my opinion, the way that I teach it and people teach it all sorts of different ways. The way that I teach it is a, it's just like a, it's a sort of an education. It's like a, it's a process of getting to know your body's signals. So, which will ultimately influence how you make decisions around food. Now, at the end of the day, and this is where the distinction between intuitive eating and quote normal eating. Mm-hmm. So one of the traps that people fall into when they're, pursuing intuitive eating, like so, like somebody who's really struggling with diet mentality and feeling really crazy around food, and they're like, "Oh my god, I can't do this anymore. I'm gonna do intuitive eating." And then they try intuitive eating, and they can easily turn intuitive eating into a set of rules, like, "I'm gonna only eat when I'm hungry, and I'm gonna stop when I'm full. I'm never gonna eat emotionally. I'm never gonna like have a cupcake, you know." And like it can go there for some people, right? Which is why, you know, that was when I actually started my blog, was because I was intuitive eating was kind of a thing, and I was like getting really into it. But everyone was just talking about eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full and listen to your body, listen to the body. And then like what would happen is I was trying to do this perfectly. Right. And so when I would, you know, oh God, you know what? I'm just really sad and I just want a bowl of ice cream. When that would happen to me, when I would have moments that for whatever reason, I wasn't listening to my body perfectly, or I wasn't doing the biological, like the thing that my body wanted according to this hunger and fullness. When I felt like I was failing at intuitive eating or doing it wrong, I would binge because I would be off the wagon, right? I'd be like,
I'm off the intuitive eating wagon.
Exactly.
Damn
exactly.
The wagon.
And so this was one of my first blog posts that I ever wrote that got a lot of traction, that like in my mind is sort of where like my career really began. And this was like probably 7 years ago, something like that. But like was when I wrote this article where I was like, hey guys, I'm pursuing intuitive eating and like I'm noticing that I'm turning it effectively into a diet and like I don't want to do that anymore. Like it has to be okay if we decide to eat something that isn't great for our bodies, right? Like that has to be okay, right? Like it has to be, because if it's not okay, right? If it's like, oh my God, now I'm off the wet, right? I'm just doing the same. I was just doing the same thing that I used to do with traditional diets with intuitive eating.
Yeah.
It was better, right? Like I wasn't actively denying my hunger. I wasn't actively starving myself. You know, it was much, much better. But I still was approaching intuitive eating with a lot of that same diet thinking, that same diet mentality. And that's a great definition of diet mentality is, right? It's like you could be pursuing intuitive eating. You could be pursuing listening to your body. But if you're doing it with this like on and off the wagon, I got to get it right, I got to do it perfectly, right? If you're doing it with that diet mentality, you're going to end up having a lot of the same results in quotes, right? You're going to end up, right.
It's the same with healthy eating. You know, again, yeah. I will reiterate this, that, you know, my definition of healthy eating is eating to nourish your body and make yourself, help yourself feel the best you possibly can. And that's not about restriction. There's no wagon involved with that.
Right, right, right. And it's like, sometimes I'm going to have a can full of fries and that's fine. You know, that totally. Just is what that is. You know, sometimes you might just have like a meal that's just like fully just for pleasure, right? I mean, everyone's handful of fries is different, right? Like everyone's like, you know, shit happens.
Yeah, I was in Mexico last week. It was shots of tequila and churros and, you know, guac and chips like for a week, but whatever. Right.
Exactly. Like sometimes like your food's just going to be messy. Like, do you know what I mean? Like
so
that's
that
just the reality
eating?
Of living. Yes. So that's my definition of normal eating is like normal eating is, I feel like the progression often for people as they pursue intuitive eating, they're getting to know their bodies. But for me, normal eating really is an emotional state where it's like, it's really the relinquishing of not just dieting in a physical sense, but also diet mentality. It's the thinking like a non-dieter, thinking like a quote unquote normal eater, right? Realizing that, like, you know, if I want some ice cream because like I'm sad about my breakup, it's not the end of the world, right? Like, it might not be the healthiest thing in that moment. It might not be like the best thing that I could do for my body, but like, if it happens, like, shit happens. Like, it's okay moving on.
So normal eating essentially is just wagonless eating.
Yeah, kind of. Yes. Which I would call dietless eating.
Yes. Well, that comes back to, you know, the whole fat phobia diet culture thing, how people right. feel like they fail, I guess, because they want their bodies to look a certain way. And that when they eat the cupcake or the french fries or whatever, they're like, oh, crap, I'm farther away from that perfect body that I believe will bring me all the happiness in the world.
Right. People are terrified of food because people are terrified of fat in our culture.
Looking. Right. And yeah. Looking. Fat.
Yeah. Fat. Yeah. Just like the concept, right? Like the general concept of fatness, right? Like whatever that means, right? Like people are just terrified of fatness and in our society and in our culture. And this is huge, huge problem. I don't know if you saw, probably not, it's like so like in my like little body positive world. But like France and Paris, they actually just like launched a big campaign to like educate people about weight discrimination in the workplace and elsewhere, but in the workplace, because people, you know, they were like, this is not okay. It is not okay to discriminate people against people. It's not okay to have prejudice against people on the basis of size, which our culture does so regularly that they don't even notice that it's happening.
I was literally just gonna say, I didn't know that was a thing that happens.
Right. But like, think about it rationally, right? Do fat people get treated? Do plus size people get treated differently than thin people?
Do they?
Do that. Be real. Just
like,
be real.
I'm just trying to think in my day-to-day life how I see that happening. I'm not denying it. I'm just...
Think about just like when you were in high school, like who got all the attention?
Well, that's...
Do you know what I'm saying?
I mean, high
like it's
different.
Very... It's very... But it's not different. It's
right.
really
so
not
that's happening.
Different. This is why people are obsessed with food and like struggle with disordered eating, right? Like disordered eating would not exist merely in the way that it currently exists without like living in a massively weight discriminating fat phobic world where thinness is a form of social status.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm thinking now, you know, as you're saying that, I think about movies and how the fat person is always the gross person or the loser person or the lame, you know, dork person or the undesirable person that you do not want to be like.
Right. Or even more simply, like you may not have like a disordered eating background, but like you had said, at one point I went on a diet to try to lose weight, right? Like, why did you do that?
That's really interesting. So I was with Katie Dalebout actually this summer and I was in shorts and I was like, damn, like I just wish I could just tone up my legs a little bit, just a little, like cut out some of the cellulite, the fat. Da-da. And she was like, because you taught her so well, she was like, why? Why do you want that? And I'm like, I don't know. I just think it would look better. She's like, but why do you think that looks better? Who gave you the idea that that would look better? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I think it'll look better. And I thought about it later. I've thought about it a lot since, honestly, because I'm so confident that that'll look better. But that's an idea that someone gave me, that society gave me, that legs look better with less fat and without cellulite. Like, that's not an idea that, like, I guess I was born with. I guess I learned it. And I was like, this has, like, rocked my world since that conversation. Because then I went to my fiance and I was like, Jesse, like, if cellulite and, like, all that was normal, like, do you think that I would feel insecure in a bathing suit? And he's like, probably not. And I'm like, that's crazy. Like, I feel like I've been brainwashed.
You have.
But like, I didn't even notice it till Katie was like, why do you want your legs to look thinner? I'm like, because obviously they'll look better thinner. And she's like, but why do you think that? I don't know. It's really a freaky experience.
Well, no. I mean, again, to your point, right? It's so normalized. I mean, think about it this way. Like 100 years ago, it was like, what do you mean women should be able to vote? Like women are just not as capable. Like that, like that's how
it was just so normal.
Like, it was just
you
so
didn't question
normal.
It.
That's how people thought. Like it was just like, so I was talking to a friend of mine. He was pointing out to me that like sports bra, the first sports bra was designed in like the 30s or 40s. Like there was just no sports bras. Like women just were expected to not run, and their boobs were actually just, it was just like, well, of course they're not supposed to run. Like God gave them these boobs like to make it uncomfortable to run. So like clearly women aren't like supposed to run. Like that was just how people thought.
Yeah. Well, that's where we're at now. That's absolutely where we're at now. And I had no idea that that's why I think the things I think. You know, I like I said, I just came back from Mexico and I was in a bathing suit. And I mean, I'm a very confident person in clothes. I'm chilling, no problem. But you put me in a bathing suit and I lose my freaking mind. I become the most self-conscious person on the beach. And I guess now that's because of all the images that I've seen of women in bathing suits, especially now that Instagram is like the biggest thing in the world and everyone's just posting their bathing suit pics. And I'm like, you know, I think if I, obviously, if I'd never seen those pictures, I would never know anything was quote unquote wrong.
No, you wouldn't. And actually, this is what one of my favorite things about the body positive movement is like, go follow some plus size models on Instagram, which coincidentally means any model over a size 4.
Right.
Right. And like literally.
But
literally.
What, I thought plus size, like I, you would think that like actual plus size would mean like, what does that mean? I thought it meant like double digits.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus size in clothing, like when you're talking about like purchasing clothing, typically means like above like 14 and up. Like, I mean, it depends. Like some people like started, you know, as low, you know, you typically like 14, 16 and up, right? Like that's typically what we think of. That's how like fashion companies delineate, like so many fashion companies just don't make clothes beyond a size 14. Despite the fact that literally a third of the country, more than that, maybe I think half the country is over size 14 at this point, right? Like, and it's again, like, we're not talking about health. We're talking about people having access to clothes. You know what I mean? Like, this is not, right? And so this is, so yeah, plus size, I think typically when you're talking about like institutional, like access to things like clothing, typically means like 14, 16 and up. But for models, if you're a model in the media, like straight sizes means 024, 0002 sometimes.
Wow.
And that's it. And anything outside of that is like, you're an alternative body model now, know, like literally, like that's what's up, right? Like basically that's the sort of like irony. But anyway, so there's this whole movement happening on Instagram of people who are alternative size models, which literally just means not 0004, like 6 and up, right? Who are like, I'm going to actually like do modeling and I'm gonna, you know, show pictures of myself on Instagram like looking hot, wearing cool clothes, done up, good photographers, the whole thing. And it's amazing because it actually really does start to change your brain to look at different images. They've done so many studies, like it actually changes the way you think about bodies to see body diversity in the media. Like
that's amazing.
Lack of body. Yeah. Lack of body. It sounds like a, like almost like cheesy, like, well, yeah, I know I'm being brainwashed by the media, but like, whatever. But like, it's really, really real. Like, it's so real that like my clients, they'll, for a month, they'll all just be like, get rid of all, everything in your Instagram, create a new account if you want, and only follow plus size models and look at it 5 to 10 minutes a day. And within a month, their body image is like radically changed.
Wow. I was just thinking that as you were talking, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go follow a whole bunch and see if my body image changes. And then you just proved that it
you
worked.
Should.
That's
yes,
awesome.
Yes,
you
so, absolutely should.
Well, then I was going to ask you, you know, I mean, and I know we should wrap up. I could probably talk to you for like 3 days straight, but I was going to ask you, how do you, you know, work to improve body image? But I guess that's a great first step.
That's a great one. That's a really easy, actionable one, which is why I like to talk about it, because it's literally just like an exercise where if you do it enough, it will have an impact on the way you think. Like it is like scientifically proven way to change the way you think about bodies is to just stare at bodies that are your size or bigger for like extended periods of time for a while, you know, like
that's
for
fascinating.
Like, you know, it's just, and the more you do it, the more regular it becomes. Like I still look at images all the time because it just keeps you going. It just keeps you pushing forward. And also it helps protect against the fact that, you know, you're also still being brainwashed every day by the zero, twos, and four, right? And again, there's nothing wrong with being zero, two, or four. Zero, two, and four is a great body size. It's just when you only see zero, two, and four, when zero, two, and four are the only things that are deemed valid or acceptable, that's when you have a problem. Because 95% of people do not fall into that, right? Like, I was like watching this documentary and said, there's nothing wrong with tall, thin, white models. The problem is we only see tall, thin, white models, which makes everyone else feel like shit. It makes everyone else feel like awful about themselves, right? It makes everyone else feel like, what's wrong with me that I don't fit this, right? What's wrong with me that I don't see representations of bodies that look anything like mine in the media, right? And so, you know, that's definitely a great actionable step, but also, you know, just educating yourself and just like sort of starting to notice your own fat phobia, right? So like, again, so what we're talking about is, you know, just like it was so normal. Like, what do you mean? Like, women, like, of course they can't run. They have those big boobs in the way. Like, they can't run. You know, like, that is, today we would just be like, that's sexism, right? Like, but back then it was so normal. Right now we're in a situation where like people are thinking fat phobic things all the time. People are constantly effectively validating thinness as the better body to have and like stereotyping or judging or prejudicing on fat bodies, right? Making judgments, you know, about people on the basis of size that I think are so subtle that a lot of people don't even realize they're doing it. Yeah. But it's just like you are clearly doing it because if you are going on a, if anyone's ever has the thought, like, I wish I were thinner, like immediately, right? Like ask yourself right there, why?
Well, that's like what Katie did.
This whole conversation about dieting is often what's setting people up for a lot of dysfunctional eating patterns. Of course, there are exceptions. Of course, like, you know, if my like grandfather like has diabetes, he might need to make some changes to his diet, you know, but like, or to the way that he's eating, right? He might need to be more conscious of balancing his blood sugar or whatever. But I think that we need to also just be conscious of like, you know, kind of like stereotyping people as like, you know, oh, those people just eat McDonald's all day. It's like, first of all, who are those people? Like, let's talk about why that's happening. Cause it's probably not just some people are lazy, right? Like that's probably not what's happening.
Absolutely. Well, on the topic of McDonald's, do you have a favorite plant party restaurant that you love to go to?
A favorite plant party restaurant. Favorite plant party group. I love plant party restaurant. Let's see.
Just like where you can get good plants.
So in New York. Yeah. I was going to say, well, like I eat a ton of Asian food in San Francisco, and I would say, and I eat a ton of Burmese food specifically. And Burmese food is really interesting because it's like, there's just a lot of fresh vegetables, like a lot of like uncooked raw vegetables even. Like, I don't know if you've ever had a tea leaf salad.
No.
It is literally the craziest thing I've ever eaten. It is the best thing. I'm like, oh my God, this is how I'm going to eat. I am not a big cold vegetables person. Like I typically prefer my vegetables warm and cooked. Like I like warm foods. I like warm things. I'm not a person who will typically order a salad, a cold salad at a restaurant. Because it's just, that's just not my preference, you know, like you, like, I like your little thing on your website. Like I want my, like my vegetables to taste as good as bacon. I want to be warm and delicious and stewed and stuff like that. But there is, if you ever get a chance to eat Burmese food, get the tea leaf salad. It is like the only, it is like, I like dream about this salad. It is so good. It's like fermented tea leaf. It's just very, very, it's super nutty. There's lots of nutty. It's really satisfying. It's got all sorts of like good fats in it. And it's just super like, it has this like fermented tea leaves that are just really like amazing. It's just incredible flavor. And it's, I don't want to like misrepresent it or anything, but that the second you said like, where do you eat your most plants? I'm like, I'm trying to think of like a name of a vegan restaurant, but the truth is I don't typically eat at vegan restaurants. I eat a lot of Asian food. I eat a lot of Burmese food.
That's awesome.
I eat tons of like spring rolls with tofu and veggies. I eat tons of, you know, just stewed stuff, as I mentioned before, like that's my jam. Like,
I'm just
all about that. Yeah.
We went to Thailand last year and the food was off the hook. Like Thai Asian food like that, like the stewed, like you said, with the curries and all that, the spring rolls, that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm all about that. And my boyfriend's a pretty good cook and he always cooks like, we always, I mean, we're very big on like, you know, the very traditional, like you kind of got like your meat, your carb, your veg, you know, like that's sort of like how we do, like we steak, mashed potatoes, asparagus, you know, like that's sort of, that's how we typically eat in my house. That's how my boyfriend cooks.
So what's your favorite plant to eat?
My favorite plant to eat, and I will also say I eat a lot of fruit. Like I actually would probably, my favorite things are fruit more than vegetables. My favorite vegetable to eat would probably be Romanesco.
Okay.
But which is my new obsession.
A fruit. What's your favorite fruit?
But yeah, my favorite fruit is, oh my God, I have so many. I eat a lot of fruit. I probably eat like 3 or 4 pieces of fruit a day. I eat so much fruit. That's my jam. I go to the farmer's market every Sunday and I just buy whatever's in season. Right now in California, what's in season is citrus. So I have like a bunch of pomelos on my,
fancy.
On my, yeah, I'm like all about the fancy fruit.
That's funny. I'm about like the basic fruit, green apples, bananas, berries.
Oh, really?
Those are my jams.
I do like berries with whipped cream on them, but I like to just eat as a snack. Right now, what's in season in California is citrus. So I have pomelos and I also have clementines.
Yeah.
But then like other times of, I have a farmer's market like a block outside my apartment. So every Sunday sweet. I'll just like go and buy stuff. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then, I would say that's.
There you go.
You know, there's very few fruits I don't like. Banana's probably my least favorite.
Oh,
but there's very few fruit. I like bananas with peanut butter.
Yeah.
But not as much straight.
Yeah.
All
right. What's a book that's really inspired you in some awesome way?
Ooh. Well, I probably have said this before on podcasts, but my favorite, I literally have a copy of this book called When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron, who's a Tibetan Buddhist nun who kind of changed my life and saved me. I have a copy of that book in my purse pretty much at all times.
Wow.
Like it's in my laptop bag and it's like, I have like a laptop bag that I take to my office when I'm going to work at the office. And it's like just straight up, like that book is just sits in there at all times just in case I need it.
Oh, cool. I love that.
So that's my like personal favorite. Like just Bible, if you will, is When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron. And so I guess that's probably what I would say.
Yeah, I think that's it. So, okay. Thank you so much for giving us all your time and your passion. I mean, I've never met a more passionate person really about what they do and what they teach. You are just reeking of passion and it's amazing. I think you're helping so many people. You're helping change my perspective. It's really, the work you do is incredible. So where can people go to learn more about how they can start feeling less crazy about food? I mean, I know your newsletters are thebomb.com. Is that a good starting place?
Yeah, for sure. Well, so I have a little free video introduction to my work, but it's my free video training series. Stopfightingfood.com. So stopfightingfood.com. And that is like where 80% of my readers, cause I do send the bomb emails. I mean,
you do.
80% of my email readers find me through stopfightingfood.com. They watch the video training series first. Cause it's just like a really good intro and a really
Perfect.
Good introduction to like this whole stuff. So that's what I would recommend
Love
for
it.
People first is check out the video training series. And then just like, you know, you'll get emails from me my emails are a little different. They're basically just blog posts, right?
Yeah.
So it's rarely sending like sales emails or things like that. Like it's almost exclusively just like, here's my latest like thought about this stuff. You might be interested.
Wow. That's awesome.
So yeah. And so, so that's how I communicate with people. I don't really use social media. So if you want to know about my brain and what I help people with and, you know, kind of my perspective and all this stuff we've been talking about today, definitely check out stopfightingfood.com, check out the vid series, or you can also just go to my website and read my blog, sign up for emails. Emails basically just means you'll get new blogs, you know,
that's all
that
I'm saying.
Stuff. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so stinking much.
My pleasure. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you're feeling good. You know, I just hope you're feeling good. I know this food and body image stuff is a little cray. And by a little cray, I mean extremely cray. But the thing is that we all have a body and thus we all have feelings about it. I don't think that part's cray. And I don't think the goal should ever be to not have feelings about your body or eat some chocolate when you feel bummed or are just craving it. I think where the food cray becomes too cray is when you restrict your food and thus hinder your social life and screw with your happiness. The truth is, there is a healthier alternative for every single thing you'd want to eat. And my website has lots of those recipes, as well as thousands more websites out there. So restriction should never really be something you participate in, even if you do want to have your cake and eat it feeling good in your jeans too. For the recipes, a recap of this chat with Isabel, more deets about how to reach Isabel, and more stuff from me that takes the hell out of being healthy, hit up partyinmyplants.com/72.